personnel savings from, you know, my position, Carmen's position, to extend that, extend the funding for the position for 1 year. We do worry about staffing for the position. We had difficulty staffing it originally, and if it's not an ongoing position, it will be difficult for us to keep a, you know, talented and top performer in that role.
Commissioner Fritz?
Why isn't it ongoing funded? Have you asked for ongoing funding for it? I mean, overhead funding?
This is the first time we've asked for ongoing funding.
But overhead funding? I don't understand why it's not overhead funded. It responds to all the bureaus.
I believe our whole bureau is overhead funding.
Sorry, I was just verifying that. Yeah, so all of PBEM is overhead funded. So this position would also be overhead funded. The cost of it...
So it's not 127 for the general fund?
Yeah. Kia, do you have the breakdown? Let me get back to you that on that. Yeah, because it should be...
Yeah, I think that's possible. I'll be thinking about is if it's... Yeah. Because it should probably less than that. I was struck by your opening statements about your staffing during emergencies. How many staff do you have altogether?
We have 17 staff altogether, and not all of those are traditional emergency managers. We also have admin support.
Yeah, and I figured some of them are probably not full-time either, because since you got to 40.8% on racial diversity with only 17 people, that would be... Anyway, so it's all... I know from my husband's work as a resident doctor that you can do 24-hour days on you do it on a 1-in-4 basis as a resident doctor, but you can't do it, you know, for 3 to 6 months of a Cascadia earthquake. So is there any kind of thought of having a reserve pool of people who've worked in the Bureau before looking at Carmen, or retirees, or others who could pitch in an emergency?
Absolutely. We have an emergency coordination center responder program, and that has currently 100 volunteers from across city offices. But I think the issue is that they're volunteers. And so, for example, in the snow, they're choosing between staying home with their kid and getting paid to stay home, or come and work at our facility for 12 hours. I believe in the earthquake, we're going to get the staff that we need because other work in the city is not continuing. But for something localized, like the evacuation that affected police, fire, BOEC, and us, people have their regular jobs and they continue into those, and the weight falls on our bureau.
Yeah, it seems like that's something we should look at, that where there are people who are trained and ready, that, you know, certainly if they were working in parks, there might be a way that we could make them available to you so that you don't have 17 people working 27-hour days, which doesn't sound, apart from the impact on the staff, it doesn't sound safe either, that you are. Decisions can be questionable after 27 hours, I would have to say.
Commissioner, absolutely.
Not that they were, but they could be.
And Parks has been a great partner for providing ECC responders to us.
Just to clarify, I just wanted to verify for sure, but yes, the total cost of the position is the $128,000, but the general fund cost is $58,000. So it's already input in the system that way. So, yeah.
So, Courtney, you mentioned 17 FTE. How many of those are grant funded?
So our total numbers at PBEM are 22, and then there are 17 that are directed by PBEM. So two are UAC grant funded, and their work is only towards the UAC grant, and then another three work for the Regional Disaster Preparedness Organization.
And do we have any sense of how long those grants continue for?
The grant has been somewhat unstable. It's calculated based on the 25 urban areas most at risk for terrorism, and there have been times where we were number 26. And also, President Trump has been threatening for sanctuary cities and sanctuary states not to get any federal funding, and that would affect a few of the grants that our bureau gets, including UAC.
Yes, and said municipalities have all sent, you know, our nasty gram to the Trump administration and to the Congress to express our concerns about that.
Thank you.
But I just wanted that on the record, that is a potential risk.
Absolutely.
Rob?
I just wanted to speak in favor of the Business Continuity and Resilience Coordinator, i.e. the planning position, hoping that that will be funded in an ongoing way for the Bureau.
Show? No? Okay, very good. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank
you. Good presentation. Thank you. We appreciate it very much. All right. Andrew, you had a couple of minutes of conversation around mapping.
Yes. So why don't we do that? And I will be quick because it is 12:36 and we are hungry. but there was some interest yesterday, and so I want to make sure we have a chance to discuss that. So we're going to get Young Uyang up here, and he's got some handouts for you. But also, we will be demoing the maps live. So if council,
I'm sorry. Thank you again to our NET volunteers. Thank you very, very much. We appreciate it. I'm sorry.
That's all right. We have some hard copies we'll give you, but if you actually wanted to move around, we will be showing the maps live up on the screen as well, which may be a little bit more effective. So while Young's getting set up, I'm going to go ahead and just give sort of the overview of budget mapping and where we are and where we hope to go with this. So, you know, this was initiated 8 years ago. As far as we know, it is unique. We have looked around at other cities to see, and people do it occasionally, but not sort of, I think, on the level that we do it. And we've occasionally been contacted mostly by academics who are really fascinated. They're like, oh, this is really interesting. What started it? So, you know, we've enjoyed it. We've enjoyed doing it. And I know the neighborhood associations have contacted us as well and said that they use this data and like having it out there. The goal of the mapping is to enable the public to see how our city resources are being spent on a geographic level, and as I noted, not just how the resources are being spent, but how that impacts level of service as well. We currently have 8 bureaus that voluntarily participate. Those are some of our largest bureaus, and I think some of the ones that impact neighborhoods most directly in terms of frontline services. But there may be an opportunity there to expand as well. And certainly, if commissioners wanted their own bureaus to participate, we'd be happy to put some more bureaus into this overall process. The maps overall, and Young, do you have the maps loaded up there? Go ahead and throw one up there. We do use the seven neighborhood coalitions as our geographic boundaries. But we also do carve out the central city. And so that was a decision made early on that the central city is very different, both in terms of the services provided and the users of those services. And so we took the seven neighborhood coalitions and then carved out central city as an 8th area. And then within each of these geographic areas, we divide the total spending. This is for the budget numbers. We divide the total spending by population in that area and the number of jobs. And we get this data. Is this data come from PSU?
The Bureau of Planning Sustainability.
And the reason for that is to try and capture both daytime and nighttime users, right? So the number of residents are going to be your users potentially all day, but the number of jobs in an area are going to be the number of users who may, daytime users, right? They may not live there, but they may come into the area and use the parks and use the facilities and occasionally have public safety needs, et cetera. And so that's sort of one of the ways we try and standardize the data across the city. And then, as I mentioned, we do level of service maps that track the services geographically. Young's going to run through just a couple of, I think, transportation examples just to give you a little bit more detail on what these maps look like. But we're not going to go through, again, all the maps, just really giving you a taste of sort of what's out there. A lot of these maps, some of them still are static PDF maps, but we have moved more and more towards interactive maps that give a little bit more information as well.
My name's Young Ouyang. I'm with the Budget Office. And here's... So this is the interactive visual that we created using Tableau where we show the adopted budget maps. So when we talk about the budget mapping process, there's, you know, I think as Andrew mentioned, there's 2 components. First, we're mapping the adopted budget, the current year adopted budget for the 8 bureaus that participate, and then we have a level of service map. So this is the interactive visual showing the adopted budget. And right now I have PBOT's operating budget. So when we talk about equity, it's important to remember that we're not saying that every single area in the city should be spending the same amount of money, but that, you know, it may be more appropriate to spend more in some areas versus others depending on, you know, what's going on. So, for example, this map of PBOT's operating budget shows that, you know, dollars per user for the central city is higher than the rest of the city. And that's because PBOT... that the downtown central city area is where the parking meters are, the streetcar system is. So that's why PBOT spends more of its budget there, so more of its operating budget. So as you can see, if you move the cursor around, the geographies, the data will show up. So this shows you that in the central city, PBOT spends $273 per user in its operating budget. So, so a user is a resident plus a job. So, yep. And then now I'm going to switch quickly to PBOT's capital budget.
Well, Young, switching, you'll also note that there are citywide costs that are divided among all sort of residents and jobs throughout the city, and then there are specific local costs. So that's one of the things that bureaus, some of their costs really are system-wide, or they're unable to break them down. So we include those there as a citywide cost, and then the costs they are able to break down geographically are broken out specifically for that area.
So this map of PBOT's capital budget shows that they do spend a lot in East Portland. And the narratives on the left explain, you know, first it gives an overview of the Bureau's budget, and then it talks about how they broke down those adopted budget dollars geographically, and then the map discussion kind of explains why the data shows up the way it does. So when you guys have time, you can look into that. And then this other menu gives you the year that you can select from. So
So the maps go all the way back to 2011.
Yep. So now I am going to show you level service maps. So for PBOT. So in the past, these have all been static PDFs, and most of the bureaus still do static PDFs. So these are basically two or three topics that the bureau chooses to map that is related to the service that they provide. So for this one, PBOT chose pavement condition, and some people may be surprised to see that, you know, East Portland has some of the best streets, I mean, in terms of condition. So, and that's only because it's newer. So, and not to say, you know, there's enough infrastructure
and
there.
And actually, right? Before Frida jumps in, because I think I know what you're going to say, it is the condition of streets that are already paved. And
yes.
So this is one of the caveats that I think is in the narrative. And if not, I know PBOT also has maps of unpaved streets, right, which show large numbers in East Portland and Southwest Portland. So, again, it's important, and we try and put as much context on these as we can so that people understand exactly the data they're looking at.
But good condition, if I was reading that, you were saying good or fair condition is in East Portland, yet I happen to drive in East Portland all the time and over a lot of potholes and rough roads. So that's why I'm trying to get a sense of what do you consider fair condition?
Yeah, PBOT's asset managers actually have a pretty sophisticated system of tracking the roads. And, you know, this is, as Young said, this is at first glance a little surprising, but again, I think it's really just looking at paved roads. But when you think about it, the roads in inner East Portland were built much longer ago than the roads in East Portland, which is why they are actually in worse condition. But PBOT can provide, they have a ton of data on road condition.
Basically what you're saying, and I consider a lot of our streets in poor condition. I've lived in my neighborhood for 42 years. Mm-hmm. And the only time we got any paving is when they put the sewer down there in the 80s. And you never see any kind of paving or repair
right.
being done. But it's if we're considered good or fair, those inner city streets have to be horrendous.
Yeah. I would just say that where the infrastructure exists, where the pavement exists, it's in better condition than in other parts of the city. So that's something you can talk with PBOT more about. Now I'm going to, so we've been, so traditionally the maps have been static PDFs like that one, but we've been encouraging bureaus to start creating interactive visuals. So for PBOT created this one related to Vision Zero. And, you know, we've also allowed them to not to use those eight geographies that, you know, we've been using. So, and use geographies that may be more relevant to their bureaus. So, for example, like with Prosper, we've just allowed them to use URAs. So, anyway, when you have time, you can, you know, look at traffic deaths and injuries since 2006. So, that's it for me. I just
Yeah, so we just, again, the point of this was just to make sure folks knew what we were doing, and also flag that, you know, if there are specific data points that you think should be mapped, we're happy to work with the bureaus to do that. And also, as you meet with community neighborhood associations and other community groups, some neighborhood associations know about this. They track it. They wait for it. They call us. They say, where are this year's maps? I think others probably are much less aware of it. So it's been a little bit of an ad hoc effort to date, but we're happy to take any comments or suggestions moving forward.
First of all, I want to thank you for doing this. I know EPAP really pushed to get this information so we could see what was actually being spent in East Portland and not assuming it was just a lack of expenditure. And so every year we track this. We have a fellow who takes and does graphs and stuff. Really have to compliment Parks. They have exceeded the city average in helping East Portland get up. Transportation's done a wonderful job. It's still below the city average in their expenditures. East Portland's problem may not be streets, it's sidewalks, and that's which increases the deaths out there because of the lack of sidewalks. We'd like to see all the main bureaus using the budget, this budget mapping before they make decisions. I'm somewhat of a data geek too, and I just feel it's so informative. I know with our schools, we aren't making decisions without data anymore. So to make decisions on a big budget and not using the data that's available seems like you're missing the boat there. but I do appreciate your work on it.
Great. Fantastic presentation. Thank you, Director Scott and your team. Thank you to our citizen budget advisors. Thank you to my colleagues. We are adjourned.
We've never done them on the opening days of March Madness. I thought we could throw the games up there. But.
There you go.
Oh. I'm like out. The interactive map of your bracket. You know.
How bad are you?
I'll be taking that.
Oh, yeah, I'll grab that.
I'll be taking that. Yeah. Okay.
We're off. We're ready to get out of here.
Could somebody run to Commissioner Fisher's office and ask if we should bring this up in
court?
Yes, I agree. And I think the change is it's the one that
do anything until then.
Here, I'm